Me and my friends always went to Whataburger freshman year. We realized that we were having a lot of fun, and so we started putting out flyers saying Whataburger Social, and it just took off from there and started getting really big. One of the weeks, we got up to 65 people. We definitely have a lot of people that order the honey barbecue chicken strip sandwich, hearty chicken strips, Texas toast, the barbecue sauce pouring off the sides, cheese melts on top, delicious. The honey barbecue chicken strip sandwich, that's my all-time favorite.
I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed-rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.
Are we live? Wait, are we live?
We're live.
We're 9:15. 15 minutes of jawing and, as my daughter calls it, coking and joking with Joe. Get out of here, dog. Oh, it's the Supernatural Substation, everybody. You know that because everything's going to go harebrained and crazy. It's Friday, the 1st of February. Not exactly Groundhog Day yet, right? Right, Bernadine? My co-host, Bernadine LeBlanc?
Correct.
Correct.
Hey, everybody.
There she is. There she is.
I'm here.
Well, sorry we're a little late on the uptick or whatever. Oh, I'm Ellen Pistanio, like y'all don't know. And we have guests in about 15 minutes. We have tonight Tony and Deborah Pickman of the infamous Sally House haunting. So it's one of the oldest known hauntings, at least that I know about, because I've seen it on so many different shows, since a long time ago. So they're going to join us and they're going to tell us firsthand their stories, so which is always interesting. So what's up, Bernadine? At least we're not up north.
That's right. I can deal with our crazy weather here.
I'm telling you, I just read, it was terrible. They found a man frozen to death at the FedEx, some kind of a hub place. I think it was like up in Illinois or something. Guy, I guess he fell down. They don't even know whether he had a heart attack or anything. 69-year-old guy, and he was thrown between like a truck and two cars, frozen to death. So he might have had a heart attack and fell down. He might have, hurt himself. I don't know. But anyway, I mean, this is bad,
Yeah.
This is bad. And now it's going to be like 90 degrees difference or something. They were in the, the below zeros. And I don't know. They said they got the warm weather coming. We're going to be like 80 degrees. And then, they're going to be like in the 60s or whatever. But anyway, that makes me think, that's why I was sending you those, the links to ghosts. And I mean, it was like, earlier this week or last week when this started, while it was going on with these negative 33 below temperatures, I just looked at my daughter and I was like, people are dying out there, animals are dying. That's, I know you hate stuff with animals dying, but they were finding dogs frozen to death, like frozen stiff, solid, because they're out there in those little igloos, with one blanket. So they found several of it. I mean, what kind of an idiot, does that?
Well, the animals are better off to die if they have to live that way anyway.
Yeah, this is a terrible death.
Yeah.
Well, I think I'd kind of prefer freezing to death to any other kind of traumatic death, but because you do kind of just go to sleep, but your heart stops. But there was this one case where this little dog was in a metal, like a 55-gallon drum turned on its side, and that's where it slept. And it had kind of like stuck to the bottom of the metal. The metal was so cold that they had to basically peel him off. Those people deserve to die, these poor animals. Some of them surviving, but I mean, they keep saying, bring your animals in. I mean, Jesus,
What do you do with the cows and the horses and things that you can't bring in?
They stable them. I mean, they do have, if you're raising cows and you don't have, you have to have a barn or some kind of facility to put them in for the winter if you're up there. Down here, like in Louisiana, they can stay out. Or they, you know, they bunch up close to the barn or whatever. I actually know people who raise cows, and it really doesn't get that cold for that long that, you know, they can't just kind of bunch together to have heat, you know. So, but up there, it's like, I mean, I'm just glad. I know.
Yeah, down here, we worry about the hurricanes and they drown because we flood.
Well, you know, it's like, I don't know, it's 30. It started out the week at what, you know, in, it was supposed to be 21 degrees overnight, and you got to cover everything and all that. But let's see, Sunday or Monday, sometime next week, it's going to be 79, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I can tell you, I traveled up north like I did in November with the freak snowfall and all.
Mm-hmm.
Although I do miss autumn, and I really do wish it, it's like, you can have that. you can have the snow and all that other crap. I don't want that. I'm already thinking about, you know, what to do in the garden and all that other stuff. But, you know, when you think about it, I mean, there's got to be people dying out there, you know, that we don't know about or we haven't heard about yet. And, you know, some people... The homeless, well, they open shelters and stuff like that, but there are some that, you know, don't heed it and don't come in. I would think that every winter, but this is an exceptionally bad winter, but I would think that every winter there's, you know, at least a couple of homeless people are found not alive, you know, so, but it's dark, you know, and it's creepy and the wind howling and all that other stuff. It's like, and then what I sent you a link and some people were saying that, you know, ghosts appear more in winter and wondering why that is. Why do you think that is, Bernadine?
I don't know. I never really thought about that. I mean, I've never really got different readings, you know, on monitors or any of the equipment I use, whether it be summer or winter. So, I didn't know they can feel, you know, weather.
Well, you know, I don't know. Sometimes.
No, I can understand electrical storms and things like that because that's energy.
Mm-hmm.
And water is energy. But,
yeah, but you know, so is at a certain point you get the temperature and, you know, you get a really, really low humidity and stuff. And I guess it's, you know, static electricity and that's involved too. But.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Manifesting of apparitions is usually better in moister climates. I guess you would say like humid places where they're easier. It's easier to attach to the condensate, you know, the condensation in the atmosphere to appear. Mm-hmm. So there wouldn't be any humidity, but maybe, I don't know, maybe people just putting this together, you know, how creepy and whatever it is, you know, during a winter night and, you know, just the idea of ghosts out there. But I guess some ghosts are being made, some houses are going to be haunted. So I don't know. That would be a terrible way to die, you know.
Yeah.
Not found until the spring thaw. I'm sorry.
I did get that that deal on Facebook with the frozen ghost.
I didn't see that. What?
I thought you sent me that.
I did? Okay. Oh, you mean the thing I just sent you in your messages?
No, on Facebook a couple of days ago, there was a ghost outside and it was frozen.
Oh, yeah. That was, yeah, I did send that out. I stole it from somebody and it was like water dripping. Yeah, it did look pretty ghostly.
Mm-hmm.
It did look pretty grim. I don't know what was under there. Probably just a water drain or, you know, a gutter can. It you know, leak down, who knows, but maybe that's what people are saying. Maybe that's why it's creepy.
Yeah.
You know, she's live radio, folks. You should have seen it. I wish I'd had the video on. My daughter trying to get a cat.
Oh, it sounded like water.
Did you hear that? That was mm-hmm. them scratching on the floor trying to get away from the Doberman Pinscher. So anyway. We're just shooting the bull, I guess, right here. But, oh, yeah, that's true. I did send you that. I don't know. I guess. Who knows? There's There are stories that I've read, some good ghost stories, you know, just about people being snatched in the air and the whole idea, you know, of wolves and werewolves and stuff being more active, you know, in the wintertime, because I guess they are a winter thing, you know, at least wolves are, you know, so they have no problem because of their coats, you know. You know, you want to have bears because they're like sleeping in the caves, you know. But I guess, you know, I mean, think about it. You know, you're going to an empty house, you know, it's cold. You're going to do an overnight or an empty school or an abandoned whatever, you know. I guess it adds to it better than a warm summer night, you know.
Right.
I guess that cold atmosphere, and people, you know, I think they've always associated winter with stories, ghost stories in particular, because you have to do something, you know, while you're passing the long winter night, you know. So, but winter has come.
Yes.
As they say on Game of Thrones, winter has come. So mm-hmm. Winter is now here, waiting for the zombies to come walking down, or the walking, whatever, they're walking dead king or whatever the hell it is. So people are like, they've got it. If you go to a certain site, or there's a couple of sites where they have like a ticker and it's ticking down the seconds and the hours until the premiere of Game of Thrones, which is on April 14th. And I guess winter comes. They've got all kind of theories. I finally got on board that show, caught up on it, because there were a couple of storylines. Like every time I looked, tried to get into it, I didn't like the storyline, so I got turned off. And then finally caught up, and now I'm looking forward to it too. So, you know, we'll see. The winter's coming to them too.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. That's all I got, Dean. Waiting on the Pickmans to call in. So everything went out of my mind. Everything went completely out of my head.
It went blank.
Yeah. Not hard to do.
We do have some good guests coming up in the next few months, though.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Like who? Who's next week? Who
we next got? Week is Elaine Thorpe, the experienced trance medium.
Oh, she's the lady who had to reschedule.
I'm going to remind her like a week ahead not to do a session, because that's what prevented her from coming on, because it drains her.
Oh.
So, yeah, I'm going to say like, don't do a session that day, please. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to reschedule. We have David Michael Goody Jr. coming on the 15th.
Okay.
And I just scheduled for March, Montana Jordan. She's an occult scholar.
Mm-hmm.
And she's actually has from her bloodline. She's from the Salem witch trials, her bloodline.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have Donald L. Allison. He's an author. I met a ghost at Gettysburg. And then he wrote another book. I met more ghosts at Gettysburg.
Mm.
Oh. Then we have Solaris Blue Raven.
Mm.
She's an author of 1 Million Miles Till Midnight.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty interesting. And we have in April, James Baxter is an author.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, hey. Nice. How you doing?
Hey, Deborah. We're assuming this
Hi.
Is Deborah.
I hear a lot of voices. I'm sorry. And first, I want to apologize so, so, so grossly for the error in getting you the information that
No.
Oh, no, we got it.
Don't worry about that. No problem. No problem whatsoever. I went to your site. Yeah, I just went to your site and I got the pictures off. We just, you know, we like to do a little ad for our Facebook page and, you know, other places so they'll know to tune in. So let me just go by. We spoke about it a little bit earlier, but tonight, folks, our guests are Deborah and Tony. Is Tony joining us, or is it just you, Deborah?
He is.
Okay.
I gave that other number. I don't know. Was
yes,
going to be able to call?
I gave it to Joe.
Okay.
He'll get it. Yeah, he'll bring him on board. Well, you guys are from the now infamous, I would say, Sally House haunting. So, and we were talking about just a little bit. We like to let our guests just kind of, you know, tell the story. But I don't think that there's anybody who's really interested in the paranormal that hasn't heard about your haunting. Because I was reading a little bit on your website, and I mean, I remember seeing it back on Sightings, back when Peter James was, you know, went to your house and went there, you know, for the first time. I mean, that is years ago. Mm-hmm. That's back in the 90s, I think, that started. And then several other ones. So, but there are some people, I guess, who don't really know the whole story behind it. So why don't you, you know, just tell us a little bit about how it started, and we'll go from there, and, you know, your involvement in it, and we'll just go from there.
Okay, the house we were looking. Sorry about the.
That's all right. It's live radio. No worries.
Is Tony in?
We have reached the voicemail box of 913-674-6559.
Oh, sorry to give your number
tone,
out, Tony.
Please record your voice message. When you are finished recording, you may hang up or press pound for more options.
Tony.
Live radio.
Yeah. Hey, you're live, Tony. Anyway, I'm sorry. Deborah, Joe will retry him, try to get him back on the phone. So we can just press go and start again. Tony?
Yeah, okay.
I thought I heard him on there. So, but yeah, let's go on and talk about your haunting, the Sally House haunting, and we'll just go from there. When he can join us, he will.
Okay, so the house was pretty well ideal for what we were needing. We had realized that we were pregnant, and it was next door to his brother's house. So the landlord, the owner that had it, had just finished it, hadn't put it up for rent yet, and we just kind of happened to fall into it. And it was big enough for us to grow a family. We had 3 bedrooms, a huge kitchen, which we were really loving, and a huge yard. It was perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Hello.
Hey, Tony.
Hey, Tony.
Hi, I'm finally here.
That's good. This is Aileen, and you hear Bernadine in the background. And,
hey.
And Deborah was just,
all right.
All right. Yeah. Deborah was just starting to tell us a little bit about the background. Deborah, the house is in Atchison, Kansas, or?
The house is in Atchison, Kansas, which is on just the west side of the Missouri River.
So you guys were looking for a place. Oh, okay. I don't want to talk over you. That's important. It's a block from the river. That's probably one of the reasons why it's haunted so much. But
The river lies on a limestone bed, which holds a lot of energy, which can create a lot of problems in, you know, your haunted houses and stuff with spirits and stuff. It gives them a lot of energy to work with, residual energy.
So you guys were looking for a place for a bigger place because you were pregnant and expecting to enlarge the family. So you guys moved into this house next door to Tony's brother.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like a...
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Deb.
I was going to say it wasn't but a month before we started finding little things moved. I mean, of course, you've got boxes everywhere, but I'm kind of like an anal sort. I'll know where things are and where they're supposed to be and where I left them and such. And when there's only 2 people in your house, you know when they're mm-hmm. not in the position. So we started noticing little things like that. And when I moved into a house, I'm really quick and putting everything up and getting settled as quickly as possible. So within a couple of weeks, you know, we had pictures up and everything else, and we would find the microwave would go off on itself. A lot of the electrical appliances in the kitchen were going off by itself, the digital alarm on the stove and such, and a lot of other noises. The baby bottles would end up clanking over, and there were things we couldn't explain, but you know, your first inclination is not to say, oh, I have ghosts. Although nowadays more people are prone to jump to that conclusion right away.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, you know, we tried to logically process everything and rule things out. So we really didn't give a whole lot of credibility to anything being paranormal, you know, supernatural activity being in the house.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I get, did you have any kind of weird, what was your first impression? Like when you first looked at it before you guys moved in? Because I've had houses like, you know, you can just kind of feel it is something there. You know, or maybe because you guys didn't really, you know, spend a lot of time dwelling on that, you know, that kind of thought. How did you feel when you first saw it?
I think we were in such a big hurry to move in that at first we really, you know, it was just so rush that we didn't give it much thought. It was a nice location because my brother lived next door.
And the landlord had just been painted and recarpeted. I mean, it was pretty pristine.
Mm.
So it looked really nice. It felt nice, you know, and it had a potential future with us.
Mm-hmm. Until you began to notice some strange stuff, huh?
Yeah, things just started getting a little, you know, we had a lot, like Deb said, a lot of the electrical stuff, things would go off and on. The TV would turn off and on like 5 or 6 times, you know, before you went to bed. You'd go up the steps and then come back on, and you'd have to come back down and turn it off. So, things that you try to rationalize, and we would have the landlord check. We had him check into electricity. We thought maybe we had a short somewhere because it was happening so often. And then it kind of grew from that.
Mm-hmm. I can remember one of the first things we thought was strange was going up to the nursery, and our dog. We had a Samoyed dog, which is a big white, very fluffy, curly tail. Very friendly, just loved every kind of little animal, even would play with hamsters and stuff, couldn't hurt a fly. And the dog would stand at the threshold of the nursery and just growl. Mm-hmm. And it was very uncharacteristic of her. So that was probably our first, you know, kind of like head tilt. You know, there's something wrong here.
Mm-hmm.
And what about as you got, you know, as your pregnancy advanced, did it accelerate a little bit, or did it really kind of kick in? Because sometimes, you know, it's like you have a new baby, you've got all that hormonal stuff going on, and it kind of attracts, you know,
right,
it attracts the energy.
The energies and stuff like that. I can't say that I noticed a ramp up of activity. Not that, you know, in hindsight, we weren't looking for paranormal activity, but even in my notes, because I did keep a journal, for quite a while, especially after the main incident of the house where we call it the bear incident. You know, everything was journaled after that so that we could keep a running record. The bear incident was real significant because that was the turning point where we realized it was something not of this earth, you know, that we were dealing with.
Yeah, that was the point when we couldn't rationalize anything. So,
and was that when you found all of the stuffed animals, like in a circle on the floor, or in the nursery? Yeah. See, I'm remembering things. It's so well documented. I've seen you guys a lot, but that would kind of creep me out. What about you, Bernadine?
Yeah, it would definitely creep me out. speaking of your dog and the nursery, you know how it would. Growl of the nursery. I remember watching an episode. I don't remember which show it was on with Robbie Thomas, and he had bought a dog in, and the dog would go into a certain room. Was that the nursery?
That wasn't a nursery. That dog was actually worried about the master walk-in closet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which was odd because. When we lived there, I was having really horrible dreams. I didn't use that closet. I had a real bad feeling about it. So I would have dreams of walking in there and seeing a young man being hung by another guy over a rafter. And it just seemed so vivid that it totally freaked me out. And I wouldn't use the closet. So that was kind of odd that the dog picked up on something there too.
Definitely. And so, it began, you see, hearing it from you guys is great. There's so many versions and stuff, and other people have talked about it. So So where, I mean, when you had the baby and you came back in and settled in, did things really begin to kind of go from there?
Yeah, it.
We started having like little fires. We had some really strange images show up on the photographs that we were snapping.
Mm-hmm.
First time parents, you know, you're snapping photos all the time. And I grabbed some photos that we had developed at Walmart, was standing in line. And when I opened them, because the line was long, I figured, look at the photos while I'm waiting. And my knees about buckled underneath me because I opened them up. And the one on the top had this big blue, like blobby blurb of an image. And so did the one underneath it. And it was right over the crib in the nursery.
Oh.
So my heart just sank. And I brought him home to Tony. And Tony, you know, his first thought went to, well, there must have been a problem with the processing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Walmart, you know, you're like, yeah.
Is that the old 35 millimeter?
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, I mean, was it a 35 millimeter or like a film?
Those photographs were 35 millimeter.
Those are, and yeah, that is good because it must have been on the negative too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was kind of a stipulation.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Tony.
I was just to say when sightings had got involved, that was one of my stipulations was that they take our, we'd given them the photos to, I said, I would really like to have a, you know, someone with a good background or have these photos investigated because I was so worried about, you know, I didn't want to be one of those people that had these photos that people were thinking were faked and all that. And I wanted them, you know, to show that they weren't. And they sent them off. Who was it, Deb, I can't remember. It had something to do with the FBI.
Yeah, he was an expert.
And they went through them and they couldn't recreate them. And they came back and said, yeah, they came back. They said, these weren't fake. We can't recreate these. And so it was then that I said, okay, we can show the photos.
Yeah,
I think that was way back before cell phones and apps, right?
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and before digital cameras.
There was the Christmas tree photo and the one with the crayon standing up that they also analyzed to see if there was any, you know.
Well, it's pretty hard. I mean, because if it's a negative or a film issue, it would be, you know, I mean, it would show up in other photos on that roll. Right. You know, if it's like something like I've had. Like where there was a tear that I didn't see loading
or double exposure, even.
Or double exposure. Yeah, because you haven't, you know, you have to advance. But I had a camera
exactly.
That you couldn't take a picture if you hadn't advanced it. So because we advocate a lot for going back to film, just 35 mm-hmm. millimeter and taking out the digital, taking out, you know, the little smaller ones that pixelate everything. Because just like you said, nobody's going to tell you you're crazy. You're not, you know, you're seeing things when you've got Kodak and, you know, other experts telling you it's not the film and we can't reproduce it, you know, so.
Oh, exactly.
So that's really good. I mean, in a way, it's good that it's been going on so long, you know, that you've had time to like study that. But mm-hmm. but go on, Deb. I want to just hear the rest of the story. I don't know if I have questions, but I'll save them for later.
No, that's okay. That's fine. I forgot where I was.
We were talking about the nursery, the bears, and the photographs when you were standing in line and you saw them. So you brought them home to Tony.
Oh, yeah. And the baby was waking up hours on the hour. I mean, he was warm, he was dry, he was fed, he, you know, burp, you know, all that. But since we had brought him home, he had been up all the time. So frequently, we were, I swear, the most tired people on the face of the earth. And my sister came to stay with us. She had just had a baby, oh, probably a year and a half earlier. So, you know, maybe a little bit of her experience would help. So she came and the baby was fine while she was there. In fact, she stayed downstairs with her. We caught up on some sleep, but there was activity while she was there. And the last night of her stay was when all the bears happened. You know, one of us went up, the light in the nursery and all the bears were set out. And, you know, we'd put everything back and go back down the stairs, and we'd turn around the light, and the nurse would be back on. You know, this happened several times, and we were keeping an eye on each other to make sure nobody was pulling pranks.
We were checking closets. We were
looking for strings and magnets, and you know, we couldn't rationalize what was happening. So that's when we called one of his brothers, the one that was level-headed, and we thought that, you know, we would get some feedback on something we were obviously missing. Of course, nothing happened when he was there, but he did his boss was the sister of a psychic that used to live here in town. She just happened to be coming to town in the next week. So we were put in touch with her. And when she did come over, that's kind of when we got a better sense of what was going on. We understood that it was a little female spirit. She was very protective over the baby. And there were things that she confirmed for us that she was doing, playing with my jewelry, playing with the pictures, playing with the baby. So we had a little bit better sense of what was going on, but it was an awkward situation because now we were being told to reprimand her like a child and, you know, to tell her to go to her room. And we, you know, we couldn't see if she was complying. You know, here we are, we've got fires starting and things being moved, and you know, it was starting to become concerned. And developmentally, for an infant, it's hard to tell whether, you know, someone who's not speaking can convey that they're scared or something. So when you go to take the baby upstairs and they're clinging to you, you don't want to put them in their bed. You know, you worry about what they've seen in their own room now that you know that there's something going on in that room. It was very scary.
Yeah, I can imagine that. And then, you know, leaving your baby in there, the idea of going to sleep, you know, and, you know, that's really creepy. But then I guess it began to get a little more aggressive in its activity with you, right?
Yeah.
Right. More so with Pony than anybody else.
I think the first time that we saw, well, we were having little fires start up, and right off the get-go, and you know, you had the psychic, and she was telling us you need to treat this little girl like she's your own little girl and talk to her and all this. I couldn't do that. It just felt wrong to me. I never wanted anything to do with ghosts or anything. Deb was the opposite. She kind of always grew up, kind of thought it'd be neat to have a ghost. And not my upbringing, you just stayed away from them. I couldn't bring myself to go around the house and talk to a little girl or anything. So there was one day in particular we were getting ready. I can't remember particularly what exactly happened, but we were kind of excited. We were wanting to get over to my parents' house to get away for a while. In the process, I was putting the baby in the baby carrier, car carrier. And while doing so, the baby was crying. And all of a sudden, I felt what felt like a really bad bee sting or something on my back. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I kind of let out a little yelp and thought, oh, I've been stung. Didn't think much about it till we got to my parents' house and it was really burning. So I asked Deb to look at it, and that was the first time we'd seen scratches. I remember she lifted my shirt and her eyes just got as big as dollars, you know, and she's like, oh my God. And that was the first scratches I'd ever gotten there. And
wow.
From that point on,
wasn't that live footage you had on that?
It was when sightings came up. They actually captured a 10-minute scratch forming over a period of 10 minutes.
And they tried to disprove that, too. They did the other tests. Or something with, like, I don't know, they had a magic kit or something. They were showing how it could be done. But it wasn't. Yeah. I think they brought in
wrestler's blood or something that you, I don't know, put it on your skin and then you get your fingers wet and it did. It looked nothing like.
And it probably didn't burn as much either, huh?
No, not at all. But it was good that they did that.
Yeah, it well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. That's what you, I mean, what I'm getting to eventually is that you're just one of the most documented hauntings in the whole annals of haunting, you know. Some of the stuff is so documented, and there's so many different people that have come in and had the same experience, so which is good. Because it lends you more, you know, credibility on everything that you're saying. So once you were scratched, I mean, that's ramping it up a little bit. How did you feel, you know, like when you had to go back to the house, you know?
I was really scared. I was probably a lot more scared than I let on. I mean, the father and protector of the family kind of took over, but it, I was inside, I was really struggling. It was hard because things would get worse. The scratching ended up getting a lot worse. It excelled to the point where I saw an apparition of a little girl. And I think by this time sightings had gotten involved, and it seemed like every time they would come up, they would get so much documentation there, and stuff would happen to the crew members. They would be inviting more crew members up. You know, you got to come see this. It's crazy. But for me, it was kind of hell because I didn't know what was going to happen. I was so scared of what was going
to
happen.
Right. And then when they leave, you got to turn the lights out and go to bed and be in that house. Right.
Yeah. It was kind of like living with a sniper. That's the best way I can put it, because you woke up in the morning and I had no idea what was going to happen. You just kind of prayed you made it through that day.
And right. Yeah. Or out of your room.
Yeah.
Oh, I can imagine that. So, Deborah, how were you feeling at this point? I mean, this must have concerned you, huh?
Well, this is where it kind of gets a little weird. I am a very logical and processing, mathematical, you know, I'm very, what I think they call it, right-brained. I ask a lot of questions, you know, process information and make an assessment. And when Tony was telling me of his experiences, I got to the point where I wasn't asking questions and I was kind of blowing him off. You know, he worked second shift, so I thought he was, you know, he was sleep deprived. He was having these weird dreams. He was hearing noises that I wasn't hearing. He had a sense of things that was totally opposite of what, you know, I was sensing, and not that I'm psychic in any way. But I just didn't have the same sense of things as he was. And so I kind of just shut him off. And that, you know, of course didn't set him up very well, because now he's, you know, all alone. He has no one, not even his wife, to talk to. I did not, for whatever reason, have a compassion for what he was, and I didn't ask more questions about.
It was almost like she had blinders on them.
Well, and then that's not unusual in a place where you know, spirits are able to affect you physically as well as mentally. Because what I'm hearing is that your detachment was almost involuntary. You know, involuntary. Like you couldn't empathize with him, but I would say that the biggest, you know, that was due to what was in there, and it's working on you in a different way than it's working on him.
Yeah, almost a divide and conquer.
Yep.
You know, divide us up and get us against each other, and it's kind of won a battle there. So it was definitely doing that.
Which is, it's a shame. I'm sorry you guys went through that, but yeah, that's almost textbook, you know, and that's an entity that you know, I know you were saying, Tony, that you were seeing the apparition of the girl, of the little girl, but was anything else manifesting? Because you know they can appear, and I'm sure Peter James and everybody else has told you this, and you know they can appear as whatever they want to, you know.
Yeah, and I saw the little girl first, and then it took on the apparition. There was two times, I believe, I saw a woman walk. I would be in the bathroom and I'd see a woman go down the hallway, and it looked just like Deb, but she would be in kind of like an 18th century type clothing, and she was almost kind of like she was walking around cleaning house. I mean, like a maid or something back then. And I would see her, and I would go into the room that she just walked into, and nobody there. I'd go in her bedroom, and there's Deb sitting at her makeup table, you know, undressed and her hair wet and down, you know, putting on makeup.
Looking at you like, what?
Yeah, like, what's wrong with you? And it then after that, it's like it went through stages. Like if this didn't affect me, or it didn't affect me the way it wanted, mm-hmm. it came at me in a different way. I started seeing an apparition of a really grouchy looking woman. I've always called her she reminded me of the store owner's wife on Little House on the Prairie.
I remember
and
that.
She was, and she didn't, she just looked angry, so angry. And she would actually, that one would get physical because she would come to the side of the bed. And whenever I saw her, I kid you not, the bedroom would turn. It felt like World War III going on in there. I would have dresser drawers opened up and slam. The bed would shake and list. It had to be the worst feeling I've ever felt in my life. I was so scared.
I'm glad that you admit that you were afraid, because, you know, a lot of men, like you say, you're going to be the strong father of the house. It's not going to bother you, you know, and then it just works its will on you and just destroys, you know, everything. So, I'm glad you admit that it was scary. Because it was very.
Yeah, it was. I remember, you know, two times I was so scared that I couldn't even get a scream out. I was trying to scream, but I was just too scared. It was almost like a shell shock type thing. Yeah, I mean, it's just horrible.
Jeez. So how did the spirit interaction? I mean, like, I see, I'm just saying that they manifested. I remember hearing you speak about the old or the haggy woman before, but I mean, they just kept, did it increase? Do you think it was all the same entity? It's just appearing as different spirits, or what did you
think
it was for?
I think it tried, knowing what I know now. And I mean, back then we were clueless about any kind of haunting, mm-hmm. and we've learned so much since then, but I think it tried to show itself as a child, just thinking, oh, they'll both take this child in. And, you know, that was its way in. Well, I didn't accept that child. It just felt wrong to me. I don't know. For me, it was like, this thing's lighting fires and scratching. I mean, what kind of little girl is this?
And scaring your child, scaring your own baby, you know. No, it's a good thing you didn't. Mm-hmm.
And then I felt like it just took on the appearance of Deb to try to, I don't know, you know. I would accept it then. I'm not sure. And
so
by the time
it's trying to drive a bigger wedge, you know, just simply trying to. Deb, are you talking?
No, that's not.
Is that you whispering on the phone?
No.
Well, somebody's whispering on y'all's phone. Somebody's phone.
Huh.
While I'm talking about driving a wedge. I just noted the time. We've had that before, guys, so we go back and we listen and we see. Mm-hmm. But somebody's whispering in the background. I know it's not Deb talking like to somebody else. I mean, I thought that's what it was. You're like telling somebody who's there. Well.
We've definitely had problems on phones before, you know, these interviews.
I can imagine, yeah. Kind of you're used to it, right? So we note the time. But what I was saying was, you know, appearing in your wife's form to you, obviously you were the target of the haunting, but appearing in your wife's form, that's driving a bigger wedge, you know, between you and her and her attitude of like, you must be crazy. I'm not in the hallway. I'm sitting here dripping wet, you know, so it's, you know, you begin to go, okay, you know, but.
Well, there was a time that he was sleeping on the couch. It must have been the weekend because we were both home. I was sitting on one end. We had this long sectional, and he was laying on the length of the sectional, and I was sitting at the end. And all of a sudden, he just kind of sat up sort of mechanically and said, looked right at me and said, "He's mine." And it sounded like Tony, but there was like a voice inflection that was slightly off.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought he was, you know, maybe having a dream of, you know, his newborn son and that he was being protective over his son. Mm-hmm. And right after he said it, he laid right straight back down the same way he sat up. And in hindsight, I question whether that was even him that spoke.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe that it was something else that is after everything else that it tried to present to control him to gain its acceptance. I think it tried a partial possession of mm-hmm. him mm-hmm. because it was so mechanical, so unlike him. That wow. it should have been a red flag, but I didn't recognize it as such then. I was not myself. I did not question things I should have questioned.
Well, but you're a rational person too. So it was playing yeah. on, it was playing on that rational, you're not skeptical, you're, you know, concrete, rational mind.
Right.
It, that's what it was playing on in you, because it knew you were going to go, this, there's no, you know, what he's saying can't be explained by, you know, me thinking it's a ghost. So they're kind of like, and all of that is like deliberate, you know, when these spirits start doing that, because they do, they want to isolate everybody. They want to isolate you and isolate him. And, you know, one person, somebody can be attacked and the other person never even sees anything, has mm-hmm. never anything happens to them, you know? So
that's pretty much the case in our haunting. You know, Tony got most of the physical and the mental and the stress abuse, and I don't think that I ever really got any. There were a few instances where, you know, I'd cut something out of the corner of my eye or be there when it happened, but most of it happened to Tony. And although right. I knew there was, you know, a spirit in the house, I was literally thinking it was, sincerely thinking it was that of a little girl, whereas what he was experiencing was definitely not that of a little girl. And that's it presented so differently to both of us.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's well documented in other hauntings too. But eventually, as you said, Peter James and sightings became involved, and did it, and then others. Did that change sort of the nature of the haunting? Because sometimes, for lack of a better word, it's like drama queen kicks in, you know, and they don't do anything while anybody's there, and then it's worse. Or, I mean, how did you find being at the center of it at that time? Because it was like really still infant legs for this paranormal, you know, this excitement that, you know, surrounds paranormal now. How did you guys feel about that? Deb, Tony, however, whichever of you wants to answer.
The experiences, the activity didn't, it wasn't subdued by sightings, visits. If anything, it was accentuated by them.
It amped up.
Yeah, we had more scratches, more fires, more cold spots, more...
Peter, we could be in a room and Peter would ask a question. You know, I remember one time in the nursery, he asked, what's your favorite toy? I'm pretty sure that was the question, yeah. And I started getting scratches across my stomach. And they took photos. I can't remember if it spelled Dolly or Daddy. It was hard to tell. But I mean, it was just, for me, it was sheer horror, because all I could think was The Exorcist. I felt like I was going to be the next Exorcist. And because, you know, it was actually communicating, and it had attacked Peter once in the master bedroom. He felt somebody smack his face and burn his face. And while he's in there confronting it, I'm in the hallway. And at this point, I'm so sick of being the one that was scratched on TV, I was trying to hide it. I didn't want to tell the sightings crew, but it got to hurt. My back started hurting so bad. I was pacing, and Peter noticed it.
Yeah.
He's like, what's going on? And that's when I got the MC scratched across my back.
Wow.
One thing they didn't show, because they didn't catch it on film, was we were headed back into the nursery, and I had the sound man behind me with the boom microphone. Mm-hmm. He was behind me with the microphone over. And we're walking in there, and all of a sudden he just lunged at me. He said, "You're on fire, you're on fire."
Oh,
and
my God.
The back of my shirt just burst into flames. And luckily he got it out, but it was just...
Yeah, I mean, I would say at that point...
Me talking about it.
I would say that it's real at that point, because nobody's going to, like, you know, self-immolate just for TV or anything, you know?
Yeah.
At least that long, that's the worst way to go. My God, that is, that's like class A plus poltergeist type activity. I mean, it really took out after you. Gosh, that's terrible, right?
And, you know, the only reason I can think is, you know, people have asked me through the years, why did it mess with you? And honestly, for the longest, I had no idea because I've never been into any paranormal, any witchcraft, anything like that. I was, you know, pretty much raised Irish Catholic, you know, went to Catholic grade school, Catholic high school, didn't want nothing to do with it. But I was a very insecure person. Mm-hmm. And Deb was not. Deb has always been sure of herself and just, I think it literally picked the weaker of the two, and it knew it could pretty much trick me into anything. I mean, I was an easy target. So I think that's the only reason it went for me.
And the fear was feeding it. The impression I got over watching it over the years was that it was actually kind of sweet on you that, you know, this is why it's good to have you here. Cause I've heard so many conclusions of people, you know, that it was a jealous ghost. It was a female and it was jealous of Deb and it wanted you. And so it attacked you. I mean, that doesn't make sense, but it was showing you its attention. I mean,
and I can tell you where that came from.
Second, I think I've turned my mic down. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm sorry, I turned my mic down a little bit. And the fear it was just feeding off of, you know, you were just giving it more and more what it needs.
Oh, but, yeah, it was. Yeah, I had lost like 14 pounds in a month. Wow. I just couldn't eat, I couldn't sleep. I was just too nervous because when I'd lay down to sleep, I would hear everything from scratching in the wall behind me to voices. I would hear so many voices. It would sound like seven or eight people trying to whisper at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And I could never make it out. So it was just crazy. The part where, you know, about the jealousy and all that, it actually, I can't remember what the exact term is for it. It's like before possession.
Mm-hmm. Obsession, oppression.
Oppression. I started getting really oppressed.
Yeah.
And I started having really horrible dreams and thoughts about hurting Deb. And I recall several times would be if she walked past me in the house, all I could think was I just wanted to reach out and choke her or hurt her.
Mm.
And it was getting more and more common and just really, it was almost, it literally felt like it was someone that was going to, hated her that wanted to use me as an instrument. And
well, then she'd be gone, you know?
Yeah.
Then, you know, that was its way of, you know, acting out against her, get you to do it because it wanted you. So that you, meanwhile, your child is growing and getting bigger and right. I have to ask this. Are you guys still in this house? Or are you
no?
Okay. See, well, that's where I lost the thread. I just didn't know if you guys were still. But
we do, however, only live about seven blocks away.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, yeah.
Our town's like 16 blocks wide, so you don't have far to go.
Atchison, Kansas. I've never been there. I'm not making fun of it because, you know, the country.
You
towns.
Can, we do.
No, it's okay. I mean, I took a road trip over in November, and after the towns I went through, it's like, oh, yay. I'm just like, I'm wondering how, you know, the baby is starting to interact with it now. Because, like I said, I'm trying to get it all straight from the TV shows and what I've seen. Was the baby being hurt? Did you feel like the baby was being threatened or... You know,
it was always a concern of ours, but we really, I don't think we ever really had any inclination that the baby was being hurt. Maybe seeing things that, you know, he didn't want to, maybe being played with, but being hurt, no.
Mm-hmm.
And once there was one day I was home. Taylor was, he was not in the bedroom. He was down with it. We had a nanny downstairs kind of watching him while I would come home and try to sleep. But I had walked past the nursery to use the bathroom. And as I did, I heard a noise, like a musical noise. And I kind of glanced in the nursery and I see the carousel over the crib turn a little bit. And I'm like, what? So I kind of peer and look a little harder. And when I do, it starts turning slowly and then just gets faster and faster. And it got so fast that I couldn't even make out the song. It was like, dee, 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 dee. And the little things on it were like, you know, all the way out because it was going fast. And then it just came to a complete stop.
Oh,
from that point on, I was bound and determined that Taylor was never going to be in that room again.
I guess so.
So we were very watchful over Taylor. He was by our side. Yeah, I mean, if he was, there was one of us with him all the time. He slept with us in our room.
He slept with us until he was close to four.
Yeah.
But that's another aspect of an entity haunting, where it drives everybody together, or, you know, it pushes your backs against the wall, in other words, you know, where you're afraid to go in different parts of your own house because you don't know what's going to happen. You're afraid to be apart at any time because, again, you don't know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So this progressed on, and Dean, I wanted to bring Dean in if you've got any questions about, you know, as we go on before we, you know, we look at the investigations and stuff. Dean?
Yeah. How old is your son now?
He is turning 26 this June.
Wow.
Does he remember anything from the house?
Not that he can recollect. I do remember sitting down at one of the conferences we were speaking at, and we were just chatting with coffee, and Chip said that Taylor remembers more than he knows he remembers. You know, whether any of that will, you know, come up in the future, I'm not sure. He's, you know, starting to settle his life. He just got his master's degree, so he's been pretty busy and probably hasn't given a whole lot of thought to much of it. So maybe one day that information will come out.
He might. It might come through dreams or something like that.
Right.
So it looks like everybody's been involved in this, though, because I was looking at, so you had Peter James. Did Ghost Hunters come? Jason and Grant and them?
No.
You know, I don't believe so. I know they were scheduled to at one time, but I can't remember what happened, and they ended up not making it. Mm-hmm. Now, whether they've been, there have been groups over there that we haven't known about.
Yeah.
You know, so whether they've come up after that, I'm not sure, but I think pretty much every other show has been.
Ghost Adventures, I know you
Robbie
said.
Robbie Thomas was there.
And then you mentioned
Robbie
Chip
Thomas,
Coffee.
Dead Files.
Paranormal State. Oh, Amy Allen went through there? That's interesting. I think
that's pretty. Not as one of the sites on her Dead Files shows.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I think it was prior to that, actually.
She was on A Haunting. She appeared in a couple episodes of A Haunting as, like, you know, a psychic.
And that, I think that might have been where we connected with her on A Haunting, because the show did one episode on our house. I think that's where we initially connected with her. And then
she's the real deal. Yeah, she's the real deal. I mean, I do believe her. What did she find? What was her impression?
It was interesting. They brought her in and they did some really kind of neat experiments. They would have, they brought a tuning fork, and they would tap it on a wall, and they would have me and Amy put our hands on the wall and see if it the thing was to try to draw out energy and see what we felt.
Right.
And we both kind of got similar type things, but in the basement, I got deathly sick. I mean, I had to leave the house. I was so sick. And Amy got nausea and a bad headache. And she claimed that she was seeing, she said, there's all kinds of like entities coming up out of the ground, popping up, but there's one really horrible entity that just keeps pushing them back down. It doesn't want them to come up, and it just keeps, it's like in control with them. And keeps pushing them down, and they're very scared of it.
Non-human. I would agree with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm already thinking it's non-human by the way it's showing. And so you had, then they had Chip Coffee go in there, and I guess that was Paranormal State, I think. So,
I think Chip Coffee never went to the house, but I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
No, we were at another convention, and Chip Coffee was another guest there.
Oh, okay.
That's where we ran into him. I think, your Ghost Adventures were the last ones, I believe, that I know about that were in there.
Yeah. Yeah. just we're not a just say no to Zach on the show, but you know, I actually gave him a little credit for the recent Demon House thing. But some people say he's still faking that. But back to y'all. Back to y'all is the focus. So when did it become clear to you guys you had to get out of here? What events led up to the decision to just finally?
It was really strange. Tony had been telling me, you know, for probably a good month. And prior to that, his mom and him, you know, we've got to get you guys out of this house, you know. And I wasn't up for it. But for a couple of weeks before that, Tony had been telling me, you know, I really, you know, really feeling bad about this. I really feel somebody's going to get hurt and it's going to be you. And
I was having horrible dreams of hurting Deb.
Uh-huh.
And I would try to, I was scared to tell her that at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, I'd try to convince her, you know, it's, this house is out to hurt somebody. And honestly, I would tell her, honestly, it feels like it's going to be you. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I was getting, the physical things were getting really bad. I was being more or less attacked in bed. There was one day I'd come out of the bedroom and it felt like something just nailed me from behind that threw me into the railing of the stairs and knocked out, you know, several rungs of the stairs.
Oh, jeez.
That was kind of when I, for some reason, I honestly don't know what did it, but when I told Deb about that, her attitude just changed. She's like, okay, we need to go. And we were probably gone within what do you think, Deb?
Two weeks
after that?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, because you didn't want to risk the next time it would have pushed you over the railing, maybe. You know?
I think that scare of real physical, you know, harm must have been what got through. I mean, it wasn't scratches that got through to me, but, you know, the physicality of him bouncing down the stairs, that apparently bothered me enough.
It did. So because it appealed to your, you know, the love you have for him, I guess it was, is what it was tapping into. So you guys
and
packed
we,
up.
I was going to say, we really believe that it was our love for each other and our relationship with God that got us through, because was the only thing that Tony had on his side at the time. It certainly wasn't.
Yeah,
that
was all I knew to do, was to try to pray. And I think that's what helped.
Well, they do say, and we say too, that the Catholics are, they have a very effective way of dealing with spirits, and it's all about, you know, the authority of Christ, which other people can come in with sage, and they have different belief systems, and you can have a preacher come in and a pastor, but it's something about, you know, the power of Christ and having that authority that came directly from him. You know, that, you know, basically when it's time for an exorcism, they call a priest, you know, they may have seen a bunch of other people, you know, a swami and a pastor and a Wiccan, but they're going to have to call the priest to get the thing out of there. So, and did you guys ever have the house blessed or anything like that?
I'm sorry, Deb, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say there were deliverances in there and bindings in there and blessings in there. And the priest that Tony had actually found an open ear with, he sat quite regularly with him. He was due to come to the house, and about a week before he was due to come, he had a heart attack and died.
Oh, okay.
And it was just like a week after that we moved out.
Smart move, because it was apparently getting very it was getting very powerful.
It was getting defensive and powerful. Yeah.
So when you guys moved and you moved out, did it continue? Because sometimes they just go with you to your next location. You know, they just kind of
almost.
We didn't think so for the longest time, but it didn't take but a couple months for it to rear its head again. And you know, Tony talks about the exorcist. It was he hates that movie, and he'll tell you a story about being in the bathtub one time and thinking he was living through that exorcist movie again. And it was
let's go back.
I was in the tub taking a bath, and I'm hearing it, what sounded like the pipes just are coming to life, and it was a clawfoot tub that had been boxed in, And it sounded like the pops or the pipes were just going to come out and grab me. And I'm thinking the worst. And about the time the noise got the loudest, the little cabinet door at the end of the tub just flew open. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, here it comes. And all of a sudden, our cat pops out and just meow. So that's how paranoid we were. Yeah, it was several months and nothing happened in the new house. And it was such a relief. But then Deb's brother had come for a visit. And it was the first time I met him.
The cat's like, you know, you. Like, so he looks at you like, I'm meant to do that. You know, and they walk out. Oh. I'm a cat owner. It's like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, just nonchalant.
So now you're in the house.
I was literally doing the Exorcist crawl up the tub. It was that bad.
Expecting the voices and the head turning and everything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times people are scared, you know, scared to death, and it turns out to be a freaking cat, you know. Just four of them. Everything you see them out the corner of your eye, it's like, what was that? You know, and it's like, you know, the cat in the dark. Or I have one that will sit on the edge of the sofa when I'm kind of like reclined looking at TV, and I look out the corner of my eye. It's like, you know, it looks like a panther. It scares the hell out of me.
Well, there's nothing worse than two of them getting in a fight under your bed and that, the noises they make.
Yes. Well, as Bernadine knows, we have an 80-pound Doberman in the house with four cats, so we get all the I don't think you would last, Tony. It's all the sound. Yeah. It's like the hole to hell, you know, that they found in Russia. You know, oh, my God.
I'm out of here.
Yeah, it's like, what's that, you know? And the littlest cat makes the worst noise. I mean, she is just like, I'd like to record her and sell it, you know. But go on, because you now you guys are in your new spot, and so you're thinking.
Yeah, it had been pretty calm for a while, several months. You know, I was under the impression back then that when you lived in a haunted house and you moved, it was done. You know, you got away from it. Deb's brother came for a visit, and we were sitting down dinner one night, and I had gotten to where I knew a lot of times when I was being scratched, because it just felt like icicles swirling around me. It was just crazy. I'd get this bone-chilling cold just swirling around me, and I started feeling that during supper. I didn't want Deb's brother, for the first time, thinking, no, this guy's a total weirdo. So I kind of pulled Deb aside, and sure enough, we lifted my shirt. I had like 11 to 12 scratches show up. That scared me to death, because then I thought, okay, this thing has, it's definitely after me. And I remember calling Terry Gaynor, who was a sightings had brought in. He was the investigator for the poltergeist and the entity. Very, very awesome man. He really helped me out a lot. I remember calling and said, Carrie, what's going on? I said, I'm out of that house and I'm being scratched. Am I being possessed? And he's the one that informed me that, you know, it's turned into a personal haunting. This could be with you the rest of your life, or it could just quit, you know, it could give up. So kind of an eye opener for me.
So has it given up, or is it?
No,
it hasn't given up completely. We've kind of fought it throughout the years. We've gotten so much better at handling it that it is losing its grip quite a bit. And the severity of stuff has like really gone down. It went from where my kids had gotten so used to walking by and seeing me just catch fire. It was nothing to them. They'd holler at mom, dad's on fire again.
Oh,
I mean, just and to where we once had a knife come through the kitchen, travel what, probably 30 some foot, and just fly. I was sitting in a recliner and it just flew across my chest and hit the wall, and it was close enough to where it cut my shirt and left a cut on my chest. We went from that to where now it's anything like that very, very seldom happens. Mm-hmm. We can almost pick up on now when it's really messing with us. Because the first thing it'll do is start us. It will start us arguing again. And it'll turn the dumbest little argument into some huge to where neither one of us are thinking rational. And just it work at that angle. So we've really made it a practice to say, you know, hey, what are we arguing about?
The case, this was literally the case over a bottle of hairspray. We literally almost got divorced because this argument had blown up to such an extent until we literally both took a step back and said, there's something very wrong here.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, I want to say since then, we have really grown key to determining when something is messing with us. And honestly, you know, to err on the side of caution and take a step back from any argument, any relationship is a positive thing.
Right.
So if anything, it just made us stronger in our relationship than anything, you know, to tear it under.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to be honest with you, what I held such a grudge to that thing, that house, because to me, it almost destroyed my family, me. You know, had we stayed there, Deb probably would have been dead and I'd be in jail right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's how bad it was. And I held such a grudge for the longest time. And I think one of my biggest help was I forgave it. Something just clicked one day and said, you know what? You need to, what's the devil hate worse?
Mm-hmm.
It hates love. It hates forgiveness. And so, you know, I'm fighting fire with fire. And I threw my hands up and said, you know what? I forgive you, devil. And
mm-hmm.
honestly, things have.
Well,
been,
and you're not.
A big turnaround.
And you're not as afraid of it as you were.
Exactly.
So it doesn't have that to feed on. And, you know, like Deb is saying, you're stopping, you're taking a step back from conflict, you know, so it doesn't have that to feed on. It's when it's not
mm-hmm.
successful. I don't know. I don't know if it'll ever fully go, but, you know, but that's good that you've learned to live with, but you shouldn't have to live with it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, are you afraid maybe if you brought like priests in, let me just finish. If you brought like the priest or something in and you actually did some sort of a, you know, like an exorcism type thing, not a deliverance.
And I've had a few of those type things. I've had mm-hmm. you know, we, throughout the years now we've met several individuals that are, you know, well known at doing stuff like that, and we've both had, you know, several blessings done, and that has helped. That's a good thing, is now that we're, you know, back when we came out, it was, the paranormal was nothing you really talked about. It was still new and just something you kept hid, and that's the good thing about it. Now it's kind of a double-edged sword, but now there's so much of it out there that you don't feel as weird talking about it or finding help. And we've got a lot of friends that look out for us, and that helps a lot.
I know Bernadine and I both know the feeling, because I grew up in a haunted house, demonic hauntings, and people think you're crazy for a while. You
oh,
know,
yeah.
It's like, yeah, okay.
You just can't go to work and tell the guys at work, you know.
Well, it's like, come sleep in my house. I couldn't, friends wouldn't sleep over. And, you know, I mean, I had serious, well, you know, and it's all to do with ignorant experimentation with,
mm-hmm.
you know, just spells. And not me, but my mother particularly in that instance, she brought a lot of that into the house unknowingly. She didn't know,
mm-hmm.
which is another thing that Bernadine and I preach a lot. It's like, you know what you're doing. Don't just play
oh, yeah.
with things like Ouija boards and all that other stuff.
And that probably happens at the Sally house now. I mean,
so what is this? Who owns it? I mean, the owner owns it, I guess.
It's still the same guy that owned it when we lived there. He's kind of partners with another brother of his and his mm-hmm. wife.
Yeah.
But I think they've kind of turned it over to the Chamber of Commerce here in town, and the Chamber of Commerce kind of, you know, they do their guided tours and overnight stuff there. And you get some groups in there that just really want to challenge, or they're unexperienced, and they don't, you know, not all of them. There are some really good ghost hunters that have gone there, but mm-hmm. there are some people that make mistakes, and, you know, they've found homemade Ouija boards and stuff like that. And we've watched several of them on YouTube, you know, and we're like, oh my God, why are they doing that?
Because
they're scary.
Stupid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
because they don't believe it.
When people bring their children in, and with the tours that are open, you know, the self-guided tours that the city does, we're very concerned about, you know, children coming in and not being affected right then, but that something latches onto them and, you know, causes chaos in their lives you know, a month from now or 2 weeks from now.
Mm-hmm. It's nothing for me and Deb to get calls or emails, you know, 20, 30 a month of people that have been there and now mm-hmm. they're having horrible trouble at home because something has attached to them. And you know, it's just like I said, it's a double-edged sword because people, they want the thrill of the investigation, but at the same time, it's learned how to reach out. It's following people home and stuff and really bad things. I don't want
to believe. Well, and it seems to have an endless supply of spirits, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's because I'm going back to what you said about Amy and one thing suppressing the spirits, I guess it would be almost like a vortex or, you know,
well,
a doorway.
It was a bus station because there's so many spirits that are like, there's some.
Yeah, that's
that
what
more of a piece. Portal.
Yeah.
Both her and Peter James both referred to it as that, as it was a bus station. There were a couple portals there. They said they're seeing things coming, going all the time.
And so you weren't going to say names about who?
Just we've known several people that have been harmed by the house, and I didn't want to say their names because they may not want. But there's been some really bad things happen to some people that have gone there, and
I'm amazed that this
really bad trouble.
So the city just doesn't believe it, or. I mean,
it comes down to it's a profit. They can, you know,
yeah,
to them, they're not a lot of your people, you know, they're just in charge of it. So they're not in and out of there. They have had some good people. Denise Pridemore was an excellent, her and her husband were really great at running it. We're very careful.
Mm-hmm. Very factual about, you know, what they shared with the public, and didn't, you know, create or accentuate some of the hearsay that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just like any other bad place. It has a reputation that, you know, with the way the paranormal has become popular now, you know, mm-hmm. they become tourist attractions and the city latches on to that.
Yep. Yeah, I'm in New Orleans. I know, I'm from New Orleans, so I got a whole area
yeah.
that's like, the whole city is like that. But but still, I mean, you know, most of the serious things like investigators or investigations. I mean, they do some. If they go into a really haunted thing, they kind of like warn you not to bring kids along. And the tours, like the tours themselves, are pretty adult, so they usually discourage the kids. But that's I mean, that's playing with fire up there, you know, I guess money.
Yeah.
Dean, so what I know you got some questions and you want to come in. I don't want to keep you out there. Come on in, Dean.
Yeah. I know you remember, Eileen, we had one case. I'm not going to say any names, but remember when we had that case here and that demon spirit said he's mine?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
When Deborah said that, that's what clicked in my mind was mm-hmm. that case that we had, because that was a demonic haunting.
Yeah, and it didn't only tell you that. It told, Ron, our psychic, went out in an attempt to help.
They're just staking their claim.
Yeah.
And then
I think it was
Tony that whenever, I mean, the experiences you had in the house and the thoughts you had, the dreams you had of harming mm-hmm. Deborah. I'm sure you realize sometimes I tell people, you know, that have those thoughts that sometimes your thoughts are not your own and you need to, you know the difference between your thoughts and what's not your thoughts.
Exactly.
Because you probably would have never, ma'am. Yeah.
That's not always easy. Yeah.
Right. But now you could understand, Tony, that some people that have harmed others, you know, and
mm-hmm.
they may have been in a haunted house, you know, maybe you could understand on their part why they would think it was their thoughts, but it really wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly. I used to watch the Amityville horror thing, you know, and the murders he committed in that house. Mm-hmm. And even the Ballistic Axe murder house, you know, it's such a tiny house. How are that many people murdered in that way in a house without anybody, you know, basically right. waking up? And after my experiences in the bedroom there, to me, it was so loud. It literally sounded like, it felt like bombs going off. It was just, I couldn't believe that Deb, who was in the next room, couldn't hear it. I remember being so mad because I was on my knees bawling. I couldn't even get the door open. I was so scared. And she finally heard a little muffle of a scream. To me, you know, it sounded like World War III going on in there. So mm-hmm. these things, they can manipulate noise. They can, you know, they can keep this person from hearing.
Sound barriers.
Yeah, it's there because they're working only with one person. I've had that mm-hmm. happen. I don't know how many times, you know. I mean, it's weird, but once they get that, because they're on a mental level with you, when they get to that point where they're able to oppress you that way, they're on mm-hmm. that mental level. And so it's really just communicating with your mind. It's not a physical manifestation. It's unless it's happening just to you, right? Physically, mm-hmm. but you're hearing on your mental level, and you're just like you're saying, how can anybody not hear this? You didn't hear this, you know, you didn't just hear yeah. that. Well, it's a hallmark of these kind of hauntings, you know, that yeah, and people can die that way. People mm-hmm. can, you know, there are people that have been driven to suicide, driven obviously to kill, or just have been driven mad and then, you know, just give up and die because it's in your head, but it's not in the way that you're insane. It's just yeah, reaching you on that level. And when it has to, it does its physical stuff when it's able to. When you're at very low ebb mm-hmm. or your fear is really high, then it can influence the environment around you. And that's what a lot of people don't understand, hauntings like that, you know, that they get this idea that it's going to happen to everybody in the house. Well, here's Deb. And she's like, you know, I don't know what you're talking about. Or, you know, she's like she would seem like she's in a bubble in that film, but really you're the one in the bubble experiencing the haunting.
Yeah.
Right.
And I mean, not feeling it just made me feel even more crazy and insecure. And it mm-hmm. just everything just worked to bring you down. You're losing weight. It's getting you as weak as it can.
Yeah.
And try to explain that to a physician.
Exactly.
Yeah, then they give you medicine. Then, okay, they give you medicine. And so that suppresses, you know, you even further mm-hmm. where even in your mind, you know, in a lot of cases, what happens is the mind.
Can't become, it.
Right. Exactly. That's the door they needed. That's what they needed to get. It's so complicated, you know, and people just don't.
I worked in a mental health capacity as a pharmacy tech mm-hmm. and worked solely with those who, you know, have been diagnosed with so many of the different, you know, the bipolar and the suicidal and all these medications being doled out. And, you know, I really think that if there was a clearer line, not such a distinct line between what doctors and science put mm-hmm. forth, you know, on experiences like these and what paranormal people put forth on these and, you know, combine their knowledge and efforts to resolve the problem, I think you would find that probably 40 to 60% of these people are experiencing paranormal
yep.
Interaction rather
yep.
than, you know, this, oh, your brain's not right and let's medicate you.
That's exactly right. And a lot of times when we give presentations or I talk, there was a man named Carl Wicklund, and he was a psychiatrist. And he said just about the same percentage that you said, that, you know, that percentage of people in his clinical situation, he thoroughly believed were there because of possession, because of ignorant experimentation, because spirits attachments. You know, he would describe.
These people don't have anybody to help them foster or even understand the,
right.
I'm going to call them, you know, gifts that they have. They don't, mm-hmm. they have no capacity, no understanding because they've not been brought up. It's been so taboo to speak about, you know, anything like this. You know, nobody wants to be the psychic or the, you know, the one that sees this or can talk to that. And so you either are born and have that stigma put on you or you're, you know, medicated.
Well, and he was writing in 1924. Okay, this was in the 1920s. Oh, wow. And the way that he got to his conclusions, he had his wife was a trance medium, and he combined, just like you just said, he combined his psychiatric knowledge and research with her abilities, and they were able to free people from attachments, to contact the spirits that were around people, particularly, like, for example, suicides. Suicides are never alone. It never just happens by themselves. And when they do finally hang themselves, cut their wrists or whatever, when they're self-aware on the other side, they see the spirits that are around them that have been tormenting them, like they were tormenting you, Tony, to do it, mm-hmm. do it, go ahead, hang yourself, you know, whatever. People, and a lot of times when people say, I don't know why he did that, I never knew that he, whatever, like he never gave any indication and he hung himself or something. That's the situation. There are always spirits around. And in that, and Bernadine, you worked in mental health too. You know, for that amount of people to be locked up, and they really seriously could be helped if they, you know, they mm-hmm. give them the medicine and then they take down all their defenses.
I spoke to the psychiatrist there, and they said there is no diagnosis of possession. So that's their only choice is to medicate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they'll get shamed out of their industry.
Right.
We need more doctors that will put themselves, because right now doctors don't want to tarnish their good name of being, you know, a professional, logical, you know, educated entity. They don't want to put that in jeopardy by saying, oh yeah, I think I believe in the paranormal and the paranormal has some bearing on this case. They don't, most of them don't want to cross that line. They don't want to stand on that line.
There are a couple of them. I mean,
there are. Yeah.
We need more of them. But we do need more, right? There's, I mean, we're talking about you guys, but there, I don't know if you've ever heard of, this is kind of off the Sally House subject, but the little girl, January is her name, and she is, she was diagnosed with childhood schizophrenia. And she talks about the numbers that walk in front of her, the rats, the numbers, the mice. She said the number 42 told her to try to kill her little brother. And she, when they brought her home from the hospital, now you're parents, you know, when you have a newborn baby, they look at your face because it's right in front of them, but they don't follow anything around the room. These people brought this little girl home from the hospital, which is probably where the attachment started, and she's following stuff around. An infant in a crib is looking all over, and they have video of this, at something else that they can't see. So, you know, and then it begins to, she has imaginary friends. And, you know, oh, she's making it up. They're making all the rationalizations. But what's really happening to this child is that she's attached, and there's more and more and more spirits. And until she's trying to kill her brother with a pencil by sticking a pencil in his ear. And she tells him, it's the numbers are telling me, or this is telling me, and that's a bad number, and all this other stuff. And it seems to have a lot to do. She has a high IQ, but immediately they diagnose her. This is a rare childhood schizophrenic, and they put her in medicine. Right. So
did the mother and the father have to live separately?
Yeah, they lived. If you look it up, you can look at the story. They had two apartments that were next door to each other. They had to separate. And the mother kept January, and then the father kept, I think his name is Bodie, with him.
Oh,
and
I did see this show.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, I have a book out. I wrote a little bit about it, just from an occult perspective. I'm like, you know, they've tried everything except what they should be doing, which is they should be talking to somebody like Amy Allen or even an occultist who can tell them, because the little boy now, he's got it. And he's seeing things, and he's seeing like the same thing she's seeing. And to me, you know, that's like, that's two kids telling you to see, and they're seeing something objectively real to them, but they never took that route.
These demons or low levels present as numbers, because that's what kids recognize.
Numbers, and mice, and she said the mice.
Furniture, animals,
These
are things that kids easily
Flowers talk to her.
And demons are smart. They know if they present themselves that way, that they're going to be, it's going to be assumed that it is schizophrenia. So
absolutely, because you got to be crazy, right?
Mm-hmm.
She's got to be crazy to be seeing all this. I don't know, but I mean, I was little. You were little. Did you, you know, no thought ever occurred to me to stick a pencil. I don't have a little sister, but maybe in my cousin's ear. I mean, I pulled her hair, but you know, that's another fight. Well, we used to fight like cats and dogs, but I never wanted to kill her. And, you know, and I had weird dreams back then and I lived in a haunted house. But this is, it's a shame because from a mental health perspective, I don't think the child, she can never be married. She can never be out of a clinical situation where she's observed and monitored. And I really do think that it just comes through so, you know, so vividly to me that that's what she needs. She needs somebody to see the things that she sees around her, what they really are. So, and I mean, fortunately, your child and your children, it's not happening to, but they don't understand. And
no,
you're right.
I really, really applaud Chip Coffey's Psychic Kids. It's too bad that he was pulled off there and, you know, the whole, oh, you're exploiting kids, because he was really, he was not doing a disservice to children.
Is that what happened? I didn't know that he was, they said he was exploiting.
That's my understanding. And if it's incorrect, you know, that's my understanding. And I apologize if my understanding is incorrect.
Well, he could still do it without being on TV, I guess. And he probably still is or still does.
Yeah, but he gave all those children advocates, you know, their parents and stuff that, you know, are there to help and understand and support them.
Right.
And when children don't have that, I think that is a majority of what you end up in the health system, you know, is mentally, you know, disabled, basically.
They can't. Yeah. Because they don't have the tools to deal with it as they grow. And then, too, you start taking in school the exposure to people who want to bully them, and then they suppress it even more. Yeah. I mean, a lot of suicides and stuff are probably related to, you know, to that, like they think they're crazy because society's telling them they're crazy. And so they're going to kill themselves, which is exactly what those spirits want. You know, that's they get another one. They're ruined. They're ruined spirits, and they ruin for the sake of ruin. So there'll be more of them, you know, to ruin somebody else. But, but I'm glad that, you know, that in a way that house is still there, because they can go and investigate, you know, like Zach Bagans had that house that was a demon thing, and he tore it down. And, you know, everybody, I mean, across the board, everybody's like, that was a big mistake, because if it was real, they could have gone in and studied it, because we haven't gotten to the point where we can actually formally study, you know, which is something Dean and I advocate too. It's like, where do we take this now? You guys have all these experiences, and they're all verified. 1, 2, 3, 4 people saying, yes, it's all on film. What do you do with that? You know, it's like, it happened to you, it's yours, but wouldn't it be great if we had some, like, experts at the top of the pyramid to look at it and verify and record it, you know, for future stuff. But
house was I'm going to call it a science lab for the longest time, when Kansas Paranormal Group was in there, because they did a lot of experimentation, and the EVPs that they got, they identified, you know, a certain number of people that always seemed to be at the house, and others that seemed to come and go or just pop in once in a while. It was kind of like a lab, because there were constants there.
Yeah. And I'm glad about that in a way, you know, because whenever we find something like that, then, you know, like the Borley Rectory in England a long time ago, but it was, they had access to it like that over the years. So, you know, I mean, that's just saying where we can go. So I have one more question, because we're coming up against, we've got like four or five minutes. How come there's no movie?
Oh, there is. There's the
no, I mean, like a big screen movie, because this would be, why is James Wan not making a movie out of this?
Paramount.
We've had some that are kind of there. It's kind of being a thought of right now. Deb, part of it, I think, just Deb and I were never, it just, I don't know, you know, we're little small town country people, and just nothing we wanted to make money off of.
Because immediately people are saying, look, you're making money, that can't be true, but this really should be made into a film, honestly. I mean,
I believe, what was it? Was it, well, you had the one movie that was made a long time ago. Haunting in the Heartland, I think it was.
Yeah.
And, but other than that, yeah, it's, I little surprised myself.
Well, I mean,
but we
you should shop it around. You should shop it around to, like, now that Netflix is making movies, they have all these independent productions like YouTube. And I mean, I would love to see, you know why I'm saying it, other than I would love to see, I think that would be a cool movie, you know, come out in the summer rush or something like that. That would be cool to see. But you guys deserve something from this. I mean, you've learned lessons, and I know you're closer than ever and all, but you do deserve compensation for that. You know, that can be a legacy for your children, you know, because it is the probably among the most verified hauntings that has, over the years, nobody's disproved it. Nobody's, you know, proved you guys liars, but you're telling the truth. So, I mean, geez.
Yeah, it's funny. Every time somebody goes in there and gets scratched, we're like, yes.
You need more proof. Like an entertainment lawyer or an agent or somebody to shop it around to, you know, seriously. I mean, because I would go see it.
Okay. We've just never been into the paranormal to capitalize on it for monetary. Yeah. And we've never, you know, people think we do. Literally, I mean, there was, there's been recent comments made that we've gotten wind of that we live in a mansion and we have a vacation house and, you know, all these different things.
Well,
people think we make huge amounts of money on
this whole
thing.
Haven't you worked your whole life now? Haven't you worked your whole life? I mean, at this point in your life and your marriage, shouldn't you be having some of the things that you work for? Just tell us people kiss your butts. That's all. I want to see it as a movie. Y'all should talk to Ralph Saarchi because they made a movie out of his thing. So y'all ought to get with him and he can get you in touch with whoever made Deliverance from Evil. But seriously, an entertainment lawyer could probably shop it around. Y'all could put a little money into that. I would like to see it made into a film.
We have some friends that have ties to the Netflix, and we were kind of approached by them. And we you know, we told them we'd talk about it with them. And we're, you know, just kind of waiting on.
Do it. I used to read cards and stuff.
I'm
telling y'all, I used to do cards and all this other kind of stuff. I have a really good feeling. You get the story out there. Do that. I really do, because it'd be a legacy for both of you. I mean, for all the aggravation that it's put you through, you know, you should. I know money, you know, everybody says, but that helps your family. That's your legacy, you know, and you suffered for that, both of you. So I can't wait. I want to see it. And when it comes out, we're going to have you
back. You'll be the first to know.
Somebody let me know. Yeah, let Bernadine know. We'll know that. I mean, seriously. So take that little bit of inspiration that I just had. I want to see the movie on Netflix. That's going to be so good. I really do. Because I've always felt like so much sympathy for you two guys. I'm like, look at this poor guy. You know, look at this and the babies. And, the, you know, so it's. That's why it's one of the most documented things I've followed over the years. So, but I hope you will come back, even if you guys don't have a movie.
Oh, sure.
So we can reschedule always. I mean, just to talk even about just the paranormal in general and other experiences that you might have had.
That's always interesting, because sharing is the only way we're moving forward in this
absolutely
field.
Well, if you need any input from either one of us, you know, I mean, we do that as well. You know, if you need some help with something that comes up, let me know. I get people in touch with the right people and stuff like that. But you know,
we work external cases all the time. I mean, we do investigate. We belong to Paranormal Task Force out of St. Louis. Ooh.
Oh, Greg Myers, Greg and them. Greg and Keith was on it, and Steven, he's LeChance, he's somewhere else. But yeah, I remember them. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. Just let me know. I mean, seriously, I think that would be great. That's your next step. So Netflix
sounds
will
good.
Call you. Well, you guys have a great weekend. I'm not watching the Super Bowl. I don't know if you guys are. I'm a Saints fan, so I'm boycotting. Nadine, you're not watching the Super Bowl, huh?
I'm burned out on the Patriots.
Nope, I'm watching something else. So they robbed us. So I don't want to get into football now. But anyway, you guys have been great. So I appreciate you being on. And
well, thanks for the opportunity as well.
Yeah,
we appreciate you having us on.
Well, I'm happy to be able to speak to you just face-to-face kind of, or, you know, directly, because, I've, like I said, it's one of the most interesting things I've ever followed. So, well, I hope only good stuff happens and you're going to have a movie. So that's going to be good.
Oh, thank you.
We appreciate you guys, it.
I do. Well, you have a great weekend, whatever it is that y'all do.
You guys too.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
Deborah and Tony.
Bye.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
See, it's going to be on Netflix. That's what's going to happen.
I think you just talked them into it.
Well, I mean, they should. There's so many people around. There's Sundance, Netflix. You know, that's what I wanted to say earlier in the show. I watched that on Sundance, The Discovery of Witches, or A Discovery of Witches.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. I don't know. You could get a free trial on the Sundance app, and you go ahead and you can watch it, and then you have like 7 days to cancel. That show is great. That was a great show. It's all about witches and vampires, and it's just really great. So anyway, that's my review of it. Okay, so we're up against the end here. Bernadine, where do they find you?
You can find me on Facebook or on my website, lspr-society.com.
And I'm at www.alinepastanio.net. Buy my books. Please buy my books. I've been working on books, so there'll be more. If you buy it through the website, I will send you signed copies. We are on Tumblr. We are on Instagram. We are everywhere. And you have been listening to us on the United Public Radio Network and iHeartRadio Partner. Stay tuned for Miss Kathy Bilski. You're going to get high. I like this, the best part of the show. Kathy Bilski's going to take y'all get high. And we're going to go have a good weekend. And I think Joe's on the phone, but anyway, don't forget that that UPRN is everywhere. We're on YouTube, we're on Google Plus, we're on Podbean, we're on Spreaker, SoundCloud. We are everywhere. So if you got friends you want to tell about the show, tell them to listen in. So we're gonna go and Terminus, stay up and get scared at 2 a.m. tonight, not tomorrow night. Have a good one, Dean.
You too. Good night.
Good night, and go Saints. To hell.
Yay.
I want the if it had to be the Rams, I hope they beat the hell out of Tom Brady. So, and on that, good night, huh?
Good night.
Have a good one, Dean. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Get excited, Whataburger fans. Our one-of-a-kind mushroom Swiss burger is back.
If you love mushrooms, you're going to love this burger.
Two patties, two slices of Swiss cheese, two layers of mushrooms. These mushrooms are beautiful.
It's a really good balance between hearty and savory. That au jus sauce on top.
The creamy au jus sauce. It really sets it apart.
Just adds flavor that makes you go, wow. It is just absolutely amazing.
It's not just a mushroom Swiss burger. It's a Whataburger mushroom Swiss burger. Here for a limited time.
Calling all podcasters, musicians, vloggers, and reporters, and everyone else who wants crystal clear recording that's super portable. The Shure Motive family of microphones makes studio quality audio that's as simple as plug and play. Many of the world's top podcasters rely on Shure, and with a Motive line of iOS and USB microphones, portability is now your friend. Imagine being able to get great audio quickly and easily from your phone, tablet, or computer. Simply visit Shure.com/Motive to start getting great audio for your content now. That's Shure.com/MOTIV.